Show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, welcome back. It's time already. That's right. Here we go again. Coming up this hour, it's more money topics with the Brain Trusts. It's our group of financial professionals, and we do our best right here on this program to help you get from here to there. By that, I mean a safe and comfortable retirement, potentially. That's the goal. I'm Johnny Dean. I've got my professor, Rick Plum, standing by to answer your money questions in both phone call and in email form. We will get to a lot of this stuff here during the course of the hour. More of your emails as they come in, which include a couple from last hour, as well as the ones that just found their way into the studio a few moments ago. I just checked. Anyway, you call us right now with your money questions. 877-PLANNER. Our lines are open to get your email to us here in the studio. Of course, you know this. Go to wealthed.com, our website. Find the link at the top that says find your answer, and we'll get to it this hour on the air. Wealth Education, wealthed.com. That's also where you're going to find blog posts. We have audio, video, all kinds of articles that we talk about on this program all the time. Phone calls take priority, though, so if you call right now, we'll get you up on the board right away. As we got, looks like four lines open right now, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Wealth Education, I said that. It's what we do on this show. It's what we try to provide to you every day. And much of what you see and hear on our show can be found at wealthed.com. You can also contact the Brain Trust off the air. Their lines are open there, 800-644-1150. That's the number at Lucia Capital Group off the air. They bring us this hour of the program. You can give them a call. You meet with a Brain Trust advisor. Go over your individual situation and also get your bucket strategy going if you haven't had one put together yet. Call Professor Plum, any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Again, their off-air number, 800-644-1150. Our number on the air, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Before I get into the Roth stuff here, I was saying this on the TV side of the program, and I found this. It talks about people saving, Professor Plum, in their 20s, and a lot of them don't want to do it. And not only that, but then a lot of them aren't expected to do it. The message seems to be to people in their 20s, save if you can, but you know what? 20s is for living. Go out and live, pal. Go out and travel the world if you can. Take whatever money you have. Wander around like, what's his name in Kung Fu? And David Carradine in Kung Fu. And just walk the earth. You know what I mean? In other words, just
life's lessons.
Just be a bum, right? No, that's the advice to a lot of people. And I had said, and you remember, if you fund your retirement years between, say, age 20 and 30,
right,
you and you stop,
given the same rates of return throughout the saving history.
Yes, if you compare that to somebody who doesn't save between 20 and 30, and they start saving between ages 30 and call it age 65. The person who saved between ages 20 and 30 will still, under the right circumstances, have more money than somebody who saved between ages 30 and 65. Now, I just thought I'd throw this out. J.P. Morgan put together this study as well. A lot of people have, and there was a chart, but I can't show it. If you save $5,000 a year,
Roth IRA,
yes, between ages 25 and 35, and then never save another dime, you will have a little more than $600,000 by the age of 65. They don't say what rate of return.
It's probably around 5%.
Yeah, which okay, you know, that's fairly doable by age 65. We're talking about a 40-year time horizon here. So you'll have a little more than $600,000 if you just save between those ages. But if you wait until 35 to start saving $5,000 a year, and you keep it up until age 65, you'll only have about $540,000, even though you saved three times as much as the early bird who quit saving at 35. What rate of return are we talking about here?
More than what I was thinking.
Was it like 7 or 8%?
It's got to be 7 or 8%. So.
Well, 7 or 8% over the course of 40 years or 30 years is not, you know, unremarkable, is it?
No, that's less than average. So it's like a 7.5% rate of return.
Okay, so that could
work. Which is less than historical averages on the stock market. You're not obviously going to earn that in a bank account or something of that nature. So we are talking about investing over a 40-year period of time. But 40 years is an appropriate time horizon for investing.
Yes.
It assumes a constant, an average 7.5% rate of return over that 40-year period of time.
Okay, so just very quickly, and we'll get to your calls. By the way, 877-PLANNER, we got some lines open right now. If you've got money questions, 877-752-6637. They took three people, hypothetical people, of course. Susan invests $5,000 annually between the ages of 25 and 35. In total, she invests $50,000. After, by the time she hits age 65, she only did it for those 10 years, she'll have $602,070 at whatever rate
probably
of return
seven.
That is. Yeah. Bill invests $5,000 a year between the ages of 35 and 65. In total, he invests $150,000. That's three times more than Susan did. Yet at the at age 65, while Susan has $602,000, Bill only has $540,000, assuming exactly the same rates of return. And we're saying these portfolios are all identical, okay, for illustrative purposes. He invested three times as much money, yet he wound up with less money by the time he was 65. The third one. Chris invests $5,000 annually between 25 and 65. Never stops. Okay? In total, he invests $200,000. He'll have $1.142 million by the time he's age 65. He or she, Chris.
They're looking at like about a 7.5% rate of return.
7.5% rate of return.
That's not an outrageous rate of return over a 40-year period of time.
No, it's not. But what it shows you, Professor Plum, is what about these early ages or early stages of saving?
Saving early works very well. Compounding works very well. You have to build some money to be able to let it help you. And so that's the whole idea. And that's what I've been trying to focus on the people that I talk to. My three kids. All three of them are doing something with their retirement. So they're all young enough.
Yeah, it's very important.
And yeah, my daughter's doing it. My younger daughter's doing a great job. My older daughter's got a job where there's a pension and she's doing savings. My son's doing the same thing with his 401k.
But it's hard for them to appreciate it until they actually, you know, see the results, which can take some time.
It was interesting the first several years of my son's, you know, his was where it went down in 2008. And he's like, I don't know if I like all this. But then about 2009-10, he saw the money coming back and he thought, oh, this works. I like it.
You got cheap shares and it starts compounding. That's how it works. All right, 877-PLANNER. We're going to talk about Roth IRAs. We're going to take more of your emails. Let's get back to the phone lines. A couple of lines open, 877-752-6637. Las Vegas we go. Ed is next. Hi, Ed. How can we help you today?
Hi there. I had a couple questions.
All right.
I'm currently retired and working. I'm retired through a PERS system in California. Still young enough that I decided to start working again in Nevada in another government job, PERS. Haven't really saved at all, but I have a, what do they call that, a set income retirement amount?
You have a pension.
You have a pension.
A pension, yeah. And I guess my savings is the fact that I went back to work and I'm trying to get another retirement plan.
Right, you're trying to be a triple dipper or a double dipper.
Well, going to be triple because my question has to do with Social Security. Okay. I'm also fully vested in Social Security and was curious, am I better off taking it sooner or just going ahead and waiting since I already have an income? Well, and what effect my PERS retirement would have on the amount I get from my Social Security?
When you worked in California under the public system, did you pay into Social Security?
I did not.
You did not.
And I also had a construction job where I did pay into Social Security for about 25 years.
Okay, 25 years is a good number. Not good enough, but better than 20. You will have some impact on your Social Security. So it will reduce your Social Security a little bit, maybe $200-$300. But you'll still get it. So you'll have your PERS from California. You'll have your Social Security, although a reduced amount because of the PERS pension. And then if you work long enough for Nevada, whether it's a state or a city area, you will have a public employee retirement pension from there as well.
And that's my plan, 5 years to be able to be vested.
Okay, those three incomes will total up to some amount of money. Now, whether you should take your Social Security early or late, are you married or single?
Single.
And were you ever married?
Yes.
For more than 10 years?
Nope.
Okay, forget that marriage. Just from a Social Security standpoint, I mean.
Right. No, I understand.
So now it's a matter of how long are you going to live? And do you want, I mean, because if you started now, are you 62 or older now?
I am not. I'm 57.
Okay. So you can't take it for another 5 years anyway. And the question becomes, do you want to have a larger benefit by waiting because you think you're going to live a long time? Or do you think that 5 years from now, hey, if I make it to age 82, 83, life is good, that's fine with me, and I'd rather have the income early, albeit a reduced amount?
And that's kind of what I'm looking at, is just waiting. Because if I go ahead and continue the current job till I get vested in 5 years, then right around the time I'm available to get Social Security at 62 and a half, whatever it is, I will be getting that secondary retirement. So that's going to boost my income.
Right. So we just have to look at what you need to live and how long you might live.
Yeah. If you want some more help on this, hang on, Ed. I got to take a break here. We can come back to you after the break. So stick around if you have some more questions, or we can talk to you more about this. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. Get on board right now. Room on the phones for you. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group, talking to you about your money when we come back. Market Strategy Investing, that's the program. You've got it right here. You can watch us online if you want to go to BizTV or WealthEd.com. And you can also listen to us in many stations across the country on the radio. We're everywhere. You cannot escape us, so you might as well just submit, right? Sure. Answering your money questions here on the program as we do every day. Don't forget, too, that we're also going to be answering more of your money questions in person. I will just remind you here again this hour that Phoenix, Arizona is going to be next on the stop, the next stop for the Brain Trust. Terry Keyes and Professor Plum, you can meet them in person in Phoenix, AZ, Saturday, March 12th, this Saturday. Running out of time, but there's still room for you. If you go to WealthEd.com, sign up there. It's all free. Phoenix, Scottsdale, and all the surrounding areas this Saturday. After that, Portland, Oregon, there's room March 19th. That's coming up a week from Saturday. Join the Brain Trust there in Portland and in Houston. That'll be April 9th. So those will be the next three: Phoenix, Portland, and Houston. A couple more after that into April. If you want to sign up, it's free. As I said, you go to Wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H, WealthEd.com. Get your name in there, as many people as you want to bring, and meet the Brain Trust, get your money questions answered, and learn all about retirement income strategies from the folks at Lucia Capital Group. Again, WealthEd.com. All right, back to the phone lines. 877-PLANNER. We'll get to some of your emails, too. We do take calls first on this program, though. Bruce is next in Stuart, Florida. Hello, Bruce.
Hello.
Hi. What's up?
My wife and I, we both retired towards the end of last year, and we didn't have health insurance for this year, so I went to healthcare.gov and signed up for Obamacare health insurance.
Okay.
And part of that process was to estimate my 2016 income.
Okay.
So my question is, what do they consider income? Is it any money I take out of my retirement account?
That's part of it.
Dividends on stocks that I own?
Yep. It's basically all of the above. It is all Social Security you receive, whether it's taxable or not. It's all interest, dividends, capital gains, net rental income, passive income. It's tax-free interest if you have that. About the only thing that they don't include is a qualified distribution from a Roth IRA, which is the non-taxable, not tax-free portion. They don't include child support, but they do include alimony. It doesn't affect you. But basically, they're looking at every source of income on that you possibly have. Now, if one of you has a job, they do reduce the income that that individual is earning by any amount contributed to a 401k, to any health insurance you might have there for determining whether the other person can get Obamacare. But they're looking pretty much at all sources of income.
Okay. All right. My goal was to manage our income to stay within what I estimated. So we'll have to calculate that.
Right. And that's what you do. I mean, you basically, they're saying, okay, we will help you pay for your medical insurance, and we'll give you a subsidy now. So, you know, the premium may be $500, but we're only going to make you pay $100. I'm purely making these numbers up. And then based on what you've said you're going to earn. So what a lot of people did was they just flat out said, I'm not going to earn anything. And then when they got their tax return done at the end of the year, all this income showed up on their tax return, and they had to pay back the subsidy. So that's why you want to be as close to realistic as possible when you do this. You are projecting for this year, and then when you do this year's tax return, you will basically settle up with the government on what they either paid you too much or may not have paid you enough on the subsidy.
Okay, that sounds good. If we stay within the 15% bracket, how will they treat the dividends on stock?
Well, the dividend will show up as an asset or an income item for the Obamacare, but if your total income is including all the capital gains and qualified dividends are in the 15% bracket, the tax on those capital gains, long-term capital gains, and the qualified dividends is a zero rate. So they're not actually a taxable event, but they are part of your adjusted gross income. They are part of the overall income makeup to determine your subsidy from Obamacare issues.
Okay, that's perfect. That really clears it up. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much for the call, Bruce. And in figuring out what your subsidies could be for 2016, you're supposed to figure out what your expected 2016 income is going to be.
Right. So you look at, okay, I'm going to be taking out $2,000 a month from my IRA. I've got a CD that's worth a couple $100,000 and it's going to earn 5 cents in interest. You're looking at the different potential sources of income, and it's pretty much every source of income.
Well, it doesn't include things like child support and alimony.
Well, it does include alimony, not child support.
Oh, is it alimony?
Alimony I receive, not alimony I pay.
Well, no, it wouldn't be what you pay. You can't.
It includes Social Security disability.
SSDI,
but not SSI. Yeah.
Which you would expect. Yeah, it seems to me there was something else, and it's been a while since I've looked this up.
I've got the
list. You've got it right there in front of you.
Veterans disability payments are not included. Workman's comp is not included.
Unemployment insurance, I think, is. If you get paid unemployment, that's counted as income for you, I do believe.
Capital gains, yes. Child support, no. Alimony, yes. Retirement pensions, yes. Social Security, yes. Unemployment, yes.
Yes, it is. Actually, counting income for this, Professor Plum, this is another one of the modified adjusted gross income calculations.
Right.
There is an actual magi for the ACA.
Right. There's several different magis. There's a modified adjusted gross income, a magi for Social Security taxation.
Yes.
There's a magi for Obamacare. There's a magi for, they're all over the map. I mean.
Yes, yeah. And it's just a way of changing your AGI to meet whatever specific goal you're trying to do. That's how that works. It's interesting, though. The subsidies are quite large for people who make, say, less than $20,000. But right. As you get up 23, 24, 25, the subsidies drop off.
But there's still subsidies.
There are still subsidies.
I mean, quite a ways up for a married couple. I mean, the income
could be up to 50.
Yeah, $40,000 or $50,000. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head.
It is. But what I found is it's really way skewed. You think Social Security is skewed toward the lower income workers, and it is. But it's really skewed toward people who, and I'm talking about single individuals. Yes, the ACA is skewed, way low for people who make, it's pretty much under $20,000.
Right. Now, there's also a portion, though, that if you make too little, you can't buy your insurance through the exchange. You go straight to Medicaid.
Well, that's the other
thing,
too.
A lot of people don't like dealing with Medicaid. They don't want to have to deal with, all the paperwork that goes along with Medicaid and continuing to do that. So
yeah,
if you're in that, then you try to show a little more income, get a little less subsidy, but have a lot less headache.
Well, and part of the issue too with this is when you're figuring this out, it's not last year's. You don't go back to the definite last year's income. You're using this year's projected income. So they're going to ask you how much you think you're going to be making this year. Well, you can put pretty much any number you want. I mean, because that's what you think you're going to make. You aren't sure. It gets to the end of the year, you find out that you made more.
You've got some mutual funds or something, whether you did the projection on purpose low or you put in as realistic a number as you could, but you have a mutual fund, and at the end of the year, the mutual fund gives a huge distribution.
Or you got a big bonus somehow. You work somewhere, but they happen to give you a bonus.
You got a deferred comp that showed up that you didn't know about.
And all of a sudden, they're going to say, wait a minute, you got too big of a subsidy.
Just make sure you don't get a refund, because then you don't have to pay it back.
Well, that is true, I guess, right? Because the only way, as I understand it, for them to collect these penalties, which are rather high.
But that's
now.
A penalty, not a subsidy. The penalty is when you go without it. The only way they can get the penalty is if you
but
have a refund.
They're going to ask for that subsidy back.
The subsidy, I think they can get back. Somehow.
I don't know how. I don't know. You write a check? Where does it go?
Yeah. I don't have any money to write the check.
That's the problem. All right. Anyway, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. We've got some room on the phones right now for you to call, emails, phone calls, some stuff on Roth IRAs. It's all just ahead. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. When we come back on Bucket Strategy Investing. You ask, we answer. That's what we do here on this program. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, 877-PLANNER, the number. 877-PLANNER. Is this compliant? I guess it's okay.
Well, it's saying I need. It's not promising dollars. It's not telling you that you have dollars. It's saying I just what everybody says. I need.
Everybody needs dollars because maybe, you know.
Well, that is a fairly broad statement, but I think it works.
So. All right.
At least here in the U.S.
Just checking. All right. Then it's perfectly fine. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. More of your emails coming up. Answers to your money question. We still have three lines open, so get on board at 877-752-6637. Okay, now, we were talking to Bruce before the break, and a question I was told he called back because he got a follow-up question. Bruce, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
All right, so what do you got for us?
So you said that capital gains is included in the calculation for determining income for Obamacare. What I want to know is if I have capital losses, and those capital losses exceed $3,000, can I consider all of that in that calculation, or is it limited to $3,000 like it is on your tax return?
It's on the tax return. It's the amount that shows up on the tax return. So if you've got a big carry forward, I know people that have big carry forwards from the 2000 from tech
1999,
wreck.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, it's the $3,000 number.
Only $3,000. Okay.
You can offset all the gains you want. But then once you get done offsetting the gains, it's the $3,000.
$3,000 above and beyond whatever doesn't get wiped out, whatever capital gains does not wipe out, offset, yeah. They'll allow you an extra $3,000, which hasn't changed in decades.
I don't know. I don't even know when it became $3,000 before I even came into the industry in the 80s.
I think it was in the 70s. It's been a long time, Bruce, but only $3,000 is all they will generously allow you.
Okay.
All right.
I appreciate it.
Okay, Bruce, thanks for calling back. Yeah, that's another thing.
I never even. I mean, there's a marriage penalty too. It's $3,000 for a married couple filing a joint return,
or single,
and $3,000 for a single person. So
yeah. So how this works? Let's just explain this now for people who have big capital gains and losses, et cetera.
Well, when you have capital gains and losses, you net them out first, before it goes on the tax return, before it goes on the 1040. There's the front page of your tax return, the main tax return, the form 1040. That shows basically the accumulation of other assets. It shows your income after certain expenses. It shows your interest, your dividends, and your capital gains. The capital gains are your net capital gains or loss. And so you're actually creating or calculating how much of your gain is going to be taxable or not taxable on a schedule, Schedule D. And you put in, here's my total short-term gains. Here's my total short-term losses. Then you go to here's my total short-term or long-term gains, my total long-term losses. And the first thing you do is you net out your short-term gains and losses, come out with either a positive number for short-term or a negative number for short-term, gain or loss. You do the same thing with your long-term. You come up with either a positive or a negative long-term gain, long-term loss. Then you net out the short-term and the long-term. And if you happen to have more losses than gains, then you can use up to $3,000 of that loss. If you have more than $3,000, you can only use three.
Capital gains, we're talking.
Capital losses.
Yeah.
To actually go on the 1040 to offset other incomes, interest, dividends, other areas. And so the first thing you do, though, is you look at, do I have gains and losses? And if I have more gains, then I have a gain on my tax return. If I have more losses, then I use $3,000. Now, what if I have more than $3,000 of losses? Happens more often than you would think. We see a lot of people that are still carrying losses forward from the 2000 tech bust that we talked about. You know, maybe they lost $800,000 of their personal portfolio when the dot-com bubble burst like crazy. They can use $3,000 a year if they don't have gains. Now, in that case, let's say you had a $100,000 loss in excess of your gains, and you can only use three of it. Well, the other $97,000 gets carried forward, and you start next year with a $97,000 loss. And the character, whether it's short-term or long-term, gets carried forward as well. So you're starting off the year with 97 of losses. No gains, Use three of them to offset ordinary income. Now I'm going to carry forward $94,000 in gains. And you continue doing that for as long as you have losses and you don't have enough gains to use them up, or you use them at $3,000 a year, or until you die.
And in which case, there's step up in basis on the capital assets.
But
or
the
step
carry forward loss is lost.
No, it's gone. It's gone. There's no step down in basis on death, right?
There is a step down in basis. There's a resetting of the basis.
Well, it's a reset. That's really what it is, yeah.
But that's on the assets I still own, not the tax.
Now, one thing I suppose you could say about this is, these are capital losses we're talking about. So the fact that you can offset $3,000 of ordinary income, I mean, there's some benefit to that, because the ordinary income rates are higher than the capital gains rates.
Right, and it could have been a short-term loss, too. So,
well, that's true, in which case it's same thing as ordinary income.
And given, you know, I don't want to use, you know, if I have $1 million of losses, I'll never use them at $3,000 a year in my lifetime. So I obviously have a different, but you also have a different way of potentially investing from that point forward, too. Because if I have a huge capital loss carry forward from a misadventure from the 2000 tech bust, or from the recession of 2007 and 2008, I am not as concerned about being tax sensitive in my personal investment portfolio.
Right.
Because I know that whatever capital gains I generate from there are going to be offset by this huge loss that I'm carrying forward. So for a while, I'm not too worried about the turnover rate, whether it's short-term, long-term, being tax-efficient in my personal portfolio, until such time as I use up my entire loss carry-forward.
Short-term losses, I have to offset short-term gains.
First, but if I have excess short-term losses, I can then apply them to long-term gains. That's fine.
It's not as good a deal for you.
It's the other way around, where I don't want to use my... I don't want to pay short-term gains. So I don't mind offsetting short-term gains.
Yes.
But I would rather not have to
use your short-term gains
to offset my long-term.
Right. It's
not the other way around. Yeah.
Is it the other
long-term
way
gain? Long-term gains to offset short-term losses.
Right.
Well, I'd rather pay the tax on my long-term gains.
Yes, because the short-term gains take off ordinary income.
And right. Or short-term gains offsetting short-term short-term gains or taxes ordinary income. This gets complicated.
Yada yada yada.
But
we go.
It's one of those things. It's just part of what we look at as an advisor. When I'm looking at a tax return, I'm looking at that line that says capital gains and losses. And if it says -$3,000, it tells me there's more losses in the book somewhere. So how much more? We need to delve further and say, okay, how much more in losses are you carrying forward? And do we need to be concerned with creating or not creating taxable income from your investment portfolio going forward, at least from a gain standpoint? If you're still carrying a very large carry forward ahead, you don't have to be as concerned. If you're right at the end of that loss carry forward, or you don't have $3,000 of losses anymore, now we want to be a little bit more tax efficient in our investing with our personal money.
And you know, sometimes if you have losses that you haven't realized yet, but you look and you have some losses, as some people might so far this year, and you've got some gains in your portfolio, you can do something called tax loss harvesting, which will allow you to sell some of those losers for now, offset the capital gains. Right?
Just don't buy back the losers within
30 days. Or sell 30 days either way. There's really like a 60-day window.
Right.
You cannot take the loss. That's what's known as a wash sale.
There's always something. And you wonder why the tax code is about 4 billion pages long. Okay, I exaggerated a little bit, but you get the idea.
No, it's like 3 billion.
Okay, yeah, see, I said 4.
In fact, it may even be just shy of 3 billion.
I said 4, so
yeah,
I exaggerated.
So stop exaggerating. All right, 877-PLANNER. Let's get to a quick email here from Catherine in Las Vegas. Ex-spouse Social Security benefit. How do I find out how much it is? Is it based on current income levels or levels during the marriage? Curious, because current levels are at least double from when we were married. And yes, the marriage is over 10 years. Thanks, guys. Love your show. Listen all the time. Thank you, Catherine. So where are we on this, Professor Plum?
Well, the good news, Catherine, is, you know, unlike a pension in a divorce, which in many cases is based on what did they earn while they were married, and it doesn't include all the years of service that the individual may have with that particular company, the ex-spousal Social Security benefit doesn't matter how many years you were married, as long as you were married for 10, whether it was 10 years or 30 years. As long as you were married for at least 10, they look at the worker's entire work history. not just the years you're married. Maybe you got married at 20 and divorced at 31, and during that period of time, the individual was in school for a big chunk of that, was making $5,000 a year, $10,000 a year, and it wasn't until after, several years after you guys got divorced, that they started, the ex started making big-time money, and they've maxed it out for the rest of their time, just not during the time you were married. Doesn't matter. You get the benefit of that individual's entire work history. Now, one thing, Catherine, to really get the benefit of this and have a spousal benefit, well, first off, you have to be single. Second issue is you
we always leave that off, but that's true.
Yeah, the second issue is if you are not 62 years of age, you're always going to have to apply for your own benefit first. And if your benefit is larger than 50% of their benefit, you're not going to get a spousal benefit. There's no games to play anymore if you're not already 62. And in fact, if you weren't 62 by the end of last year, there's no games to play.
You still got to apply for your own first.
But if you were 62 before the end of, actually before January 1st of this year, then you can wait until full retirement age, take the spousal, leaving your own benefit to grow.
Right. We don't know how old you are, but those are the rules. And if you are over 62 and you have been all year long, you can't sort of play this game. But you got to be single.
Yep.
Can't leave that off. All right, 877-PLANNER, our number. Taking a break here. We got more of your emails, phone calls, lines open, trivia. Tell you what's happening tomorrow in this program and where you can meet the Brain Trust. It's all coming up next. Keep it right here. How would you? More plum music right here by request. Was this in a movie or was this just?
I don't know if it was in a movie, but it just.
Just all the Paradise.
Paradise by the Dash for Light. Yeah, Meatloaf.
Yeah, there you go. Loaf, comma meat, as it's in the phone book. 877 Planner. We'll get to some trivia in just a couple of minutes here, but I want to take a call or two before the top of the hour. 877-752-6637. We'll also remind you where the Brain Trust is going to be. Hint. Phoenix, Arizona this Saturday, wealthed.com. There. Ruth, up next, Honolulu, Hawaii. Hello, Ruth.
Hi. I have a question regarding for my Schedule E. On the Schedule E, I have rental income loss.
Okay.
For $3,300. Can I take the total loss, put on the 1040?
How much income do you have, not including this loss? Do you make more than $150,000 a year?
No.
Okay, do you make less than $100,000 a year?
Yes.
Yes, then you can take the full loss of $3,300.
Oh, okay. I can take the full amount then, yeah?
Right.
So that's the different way you're just talking about the capital gain, yeah?
Rental property is a form of passive income, and passive losses have a different limitation than capital losses. Capital losses are limited to $3,000. Passive losses are limited to $25,000, assuming you make less than $100,000 total income. If you make more than $100,000, then you start losing your ability to show a negative event from passive income, unless you're a real estate professional, on your tax return. And once you get to $150,000, then you can't show the loss at all. So it's a matter of a phase out between $100,000 and $150,000. You said your loss was $3,300, and you said your income was under $100. Therefore, the passive income loss of $3,300 can be fully taken on the 1040.
Okay. Another question is the generalized excise tax. Can I put on the Schedule E also?
The general excise tax, where is that coming from? Is it?
That's from the services.
From what services?
The rental services.
You mean your property manager?
Pay the rental income?
You would need to talk with an accountant in Hawaii on that one. I'm not familiar with that particular. If it's a cost of maintaining the property, then yeah, it's going to be, yes, it'll be deductible on Schedule E. Like your property taxes, your interest, your maintenance. If it's an ongoing expense, your insurance and things like that, if it's an ongoing expense with the rental property, it should be able to be deducted on Schedule E. But talk to an accountant in your area to make sure.
Yeah, but that one is this. We need to pay our general excise tax for my rental services.
Okay.
It's different with those you just mentioned.
if it's a tax specific to the rental property, like in California, we have to pay, well, the $800 isn't deductible.
No.
No, the $800 is not deductible. That's just to register an LLC. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to answer that question. Ask an accountant that deals with rental property in your area.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, Ruth, thank you for the call.
The general excise tax may not be deductible. It may just be, you know, like in California, to have an
that's
LLC.
You know this because that's where you live.
I've dealt with it here in the state that we live in. And that's just basically a prepayment of a tax that may or may not even exist.
You're talking about the excise tax?
The $800.
The $800.
Yeah, it's a minimum tax on the LLC. But you know, I don't know about the general excise tax in Honolulu.
Well, on that, if you pay the $800, if you pay that and you don't have a tax, you can get it back, right?
No, no, it's a fee. I mean, you can't just get your $800.
But it's still, but if you owe more,
it's a credit against other, but you won't owe more because anyway.
I don't know.
It's a giant expense, and talk to the accountant.
What is it about the state you and I live in that this whole $800
lands of
thing?
Fruits and nuts.
No, but I mean, it's just this $800. Everything is $800. Everything's $800.
A repairman comes to your door. It's $800.
$800. A gallon of gas is $800.
Richard Pryor did a great thing on that years ago. Every time a mechanic came to the door, it's $500. Doesn't matter what it is, $500. He was funny.
Well, I thought mine was pretty good.
Yeah, but it reminded me of Richard Pryor.
Okay, good. Well, then I'll take that. 877-PLANNER, our number. I got some trivia for you here. We got time for this? Yeah, we do. Couple of minutes left. Don't want to leave this out. This coming from the IRS, Internal Revenue Service. 54.7% of the American taxpayers, that's 51 million out of 93 plus million returns, that reported adjusted gross income of less than $50,000 during tax year 2013 legally did not pay any federal income tax.
Right, that makes sense.
Well, wait, so more than half. Now, did we do this on the air?
We did.
Yeah, we did one on the air.
That's from the IRS that said people that made $50,000 or less paid an average tax of 11%. Well, I went through and looked at it, and the worst case scenario for a single individual making $50,000 with just standard deductions didn't even pay 11%. And so if half the people that make $50,000 or less paid none, there's no way that first stat that the IRS came out with was correct. This one, I believe.
Where do you suppose they got that? This one, I believe. This actually sounds more realistic, that they paid less than...
Unless they were including the FICA taxes that they paid as well.
But that's not income tax.
But it's a federal tax.
Yeah, but I think the way they worded it was that it was...
I'm not saying it's right.
I think they said income tax, but I could be wrong. 11% average income. I don't know. I'd have to look at it. Okay. All right. Well, that's that. All right. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. We don't have time to get to any more calls. I do not have time to go to an email because we only got a minute or so. So I'll remind people very quickly that coming up this Saturday, you, Professor
yes,
Plum,
sir.
Terry Keyes,
yes,
headed,
sir.
Headed to Phoenix, Arizona, Scottsdale, really. Scottsdale, Phoenix, whatever, for the big workshop that's happening there. There's still time in Phoenix. If you want to sign up, you go to wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. It's all free. Meet Professor Plum, meet Terry Keyes, meet the local advisors if you haven't yet, and get your retirement income strategies in order. They'll talk about the challenges, the strategies, and by the way, they'll also answer your money questions. So that'll be this Saturday in Phoenix. After that, a week from Saturday, Portland, Oregon. That's on the 19th. A couple of weeks after that, Houston, Texas. So Phoenix, Portland, and Houston, join the Brain Trust. Professor Plum, the talk is what? Hour and a half, something like that, followed by another?
We've gone a little long on the first several that we've done, and it's about 2 to 2.5.
Oh, okay, yeah, but it's a presentation,
right,
and people can ask questions during it and all that kind
right.
of thing.
But we'll have you out of there before noon for sure, probably out of there before 11:30. Our goal is to have you out of there by 11:15.
That's right, and if you have money questions, make sure you stick around because you'll be able to answer them. All right, we're out of time for this hour. If you need the Brain Trust, Professor Plum included, you can talk to any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group who are ready to talk to you about your portfolio at their off-air number, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. For Professor Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.